On today's episode of The Good Word, Dan Titus joins me to discuss Damian Lillard's blood clot, what it means for him, the Milwaukee Bucks, and Giannis Antetokounmpo. LeBron on the Pat McAfee show. He talked about a lot, so we're going to react to it. And also, I was in Miami for Jimmy Butler's return game. We got a lot to talk about. Let's get to it. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business before we get into the show today. Don't forget, we are on YouTube, so go there, rate, review, subscribe to us, comment, and also, of course, wherever you consume your audio podcast. It is Wednesday, which means it is Dan Titus back in the seat, except Dan Titus doesn't have to do those goofy intros anymore. Dan, how you doing, my man?
Doing good, Vin. How you feel? How was the trip to Miami?
The trip to Miami was interesting because it was a thunderstorm. How do you go to Miami and you can't even like spend like a day on the beach and everything else? Like, it's a little weird. But thanks, Dan, for stepping in last week I was out. Really appreciate you, man. But let's start not with Miami. Let's start with the news that dropped yesterday evening with the Milwaukee Bucks. Damian Lillard out indefinitely with is a right blood clot. Like, I don't know if people like fully understand, right? And then I'm personalizing this a bit. I lost a friend of mine like 12 years ago. He had surgery, and in the post-surgery, he had a blood clot and he died. Like, the surgery was successful, all that stuff. Like, this, when people hear blood clots and you think, oh, Victor Wembanyama had one, or Asar Thompson had one last year that cut the back half of his rookie year off. It's more than that. Like, this thing is a really, really serious thing that requires a lot of attention. He's on blood thinners. You know, there's stuff that comes with that. So in Dame's statement, I don't know if you saw the statement, Dan. The statement was talking about the game of basketball is important, but I also want to make sure, you know, preserve myself for my family, i.e. I want to stay alive. So before we get into the basketball, I want to address that part first so we don't just treat these athletes like they're cattle, because blood clots are life and death, very, very serious.
Absolutely. And the severity of it, because if you go back and listen to how Doc Rivers was discussing Dame's injury, how it kind of started off as a groin injury, then it went to a calf strain, and they were still trying to do some fact-finding. And fortunately, the medical staff was able to find and get these second, third opinions on what was actually going on, because this is a life and death situation here in some cases. And fortunately, they caught it early enough. He's already been prescribed the blood thinner. So hopefully we can get Dame back when he's healthy and ready. But I think it is important that he did recognize that, you know, I got to take care of myself here. I got family to feed. This is just a very serious moment, so I hope and, you know, send out all my prayers and positive affirmations to Dame and making a full recovery here, because, you know, Chris Bosh wasn't able to play basketball again. A lot of people's careers and lives were cut short by this, so just prayers up for Dame and the whole Bucks and organization here.
Yeah, the statement that he made to our former colleague here at Yahoo Sports, Chris Haynes, he said, and quote, along with the Bucks medical staff, our priorities are to protect my health and safety. As much as I love basketball, I need to be there for my kids and my family. I'm grateful the Bucks acted quickly on this. They've been supportive and proactive throughout the process. I look forward to moving past this and continuing my career. Now we go to the basketball. The Bucks are in this 4-5-6 conundrum with the Pacers and the resurgent Detroit Pistons. They're now basically tied head up with the Pistons. I think they're one win up and one loss up, one loss down on in the standing. So for all intents and purposes, those teams are tied. And they're going to play two games with each other in the last week of the season, which seems like it will determine who's going where, or rather who's going to New York City to play the New York Knicks. This could not have happened at a worse time for the Milwaukee Bucks. They have won a grand total, Dan, of one playoff series since winning the 2021 NBA title. Since that triumph over the Phoenix Suns and coming back from down two games to nothing And they've changed so much since then in trying to get back. Jrue Holiday gone. Chris Middleton now gone for Kyle Kuzma. Mike Budenholzer gone. Doc Rivers is in. There was a pit stop for Adrian Griffin. The question I have is this going to be another year where they don't win a playoff series, no matter who they're matched up against? Can Giannis, if we are to assume that this blood clot is serious enough that Damian Lillard does not come back this season, this postseason? There's only 10 games left, about 3 weeks left in the regular season. The NBA playoffs start, I think, basically a month, a little less than a month from now after the play-in. Are we to assume, Dan, are the Milwaukee Bucks on first round getting bounced watch even further than maybe they already were?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely on that watch list because at this point, they're just sliding. And if I'm the Bucks, they can't afford to lose any more games. Now, fortunately, they have a better schedule than the Detroit Pistons in terms of rest of season opponents. The Detroit Pistons have one of the hardest schedules next to the Phoenix Suns. But at the same time, the Bucks have not proven to beat any of the top three teams in either conference. And if you look at, they haven't got any wins against the Knicks. They haven't beaten the Cavs. They're not beating the Celtics. And this Western Conference, man, with the Indiana Pacers surging, it's not going to be a good look for them. And I think it's going to be a first round exit because even if they do see the Knicks potentially as the sixth seed, if they see the Detroit Pistons, they don't want that. And the fact is, with Bobby Portis still out, he's going to come back by the time playoffs start. But you just don't have another creative shot creator, playmaker, someone that can get a bucket on that team. Kevin Porter Jr., bench player, he'll fill the void for a time being. Ryan Rollins, they're now starting a rookie. They're just down to scraps right now. And Kyle Kuzma, that trade, as much as it looked like it seemed like it could raise their floor a bit, he's playing about the same that he was on the Wizards, but he's playing six more minutes a game. He's still averaging 14 points, shooting 43% from the field. He's just not giving them enough, and I don't think that there's enough firepower along with Giannis to get this team past the first round.
The thing that gets me is Giannis, whose greatness I think gets kind of overlooked. He's reached a stage of his career where we just assume Giannis is going to deliver 30-12-6.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it's because the Bucks haven't been, you know, considerable playoff contenders, you know, since winning the championship. They've been playoff contenders, but they've had injuries. Giannis has had injuries. They've had, you know, the Miami situation a couple of years ago. That's where Giannis was undercut by Kevin Love. Jimmy Butler lost his mind in that series, and they wound up getting put out with the Heat as an eighth seed. And that led to the Heat going on their run to the NBA Finals. Giannis's greatness gets overlooked. Here's one thing that doesn't, at least from here. He's taking by far the most free throws. And we can talk about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander being a free throw merchant, and there's conversations to be had there about the trickeration, holleration, all that type of stuff. There's a lot of usage on Giannis. It's a lot of responsibility on Giannis. It's a lot of beating on Giannis. And their number one priority, he's going to be out tonight with, I think, a foot sprain against Denver. And maybe that's a little bit more on the strategic side, Dan. But you have to keep this guy upright if you're going to have any shot whatsoever. He didn't play in the first round last year against the Indiana Pacers. Remember that Dame missed a few games in that series, and that left Chris Middleton by himself against the Milwaukee Bucks, against the Pacers, and we saw what happened there. This is the danger, I think, sometimes that comes with you're an older team and you get older because the margin for error becomes so much more thin than it was before. And when you are a championship team, a championship type of team in this luxury tax second apron world, there's so fewer mechanisms that you can use that can make yourself, that can augment things a little bit on the edges. You have to go take chances on guys like Kevin Porter Jr. You have to go get Kyle Kuzma in hopes that he will be a more serious player around a serious team compared to, you know, the clown car that was the Washington Wizards at the time. This is one of those super delicate spots, not just for the present, but for the future, because everything revolves around what happens as far as Giannis's happiness. And we can put that to the side. But they can't go another year, I don't think, of getting knocked out in the first round of the NBA playoffs. Like, they won the NBA Cup, and that raised some antennas around the NBA. Hey, maybe this team with a full year, a full training camp of Dame and Giannis, maybe they're going to be, there's going to be a lot more synergy and everything else. And they're not a bad team. Like, I want to press upon you, Dan, and everybody else, this is not a bad ball club. Like, they're right on the edge of top 10 in offense and top 10 in defense, which basically is a championship profile. Usually it says you're supposed to be top 5 in offense and defense, but generally, with the exception, you know, with some exceptions here or there, you have to be a top 10 team in both. They're 10th in off, they're 10th in defense, 13th in offense, and Dame being out puts a lot more pressure on Giannis, like you said, the shot creation. And with that shot creation, that means a lot more bodies going to be hitting the floor because he's going to have to take a lot more punishment.
Yeah, I think at this point, you know, the Bucks were a good team. Were they great? No. And I think you can really just point to, even when Giannis and Dame were on the court, they were like, you know, 12th in offensive rating in those Giannis and Dame minutes. But I think it's more telling when they're off the floor. They're only averaging 107 points per 100 possessions. That's not going to get you very far in the playoffs. And I don't know if Doc Rivers, the basketball savant that he is, can pull out many defensive or offensive tricks out of his hat to kind of get this team, this current iteration of the team without Dame, to play this next level of basketball. I just don't think that they have the assets to do it at this point. And it's unfortunate because you were bringing it up, like you said, it's a conversation for another day. But if this winds up ending up a first round exit, do we start hearing the chirping of Giannis in the offseason of, yo, I got to get to a winning squad? Because we don't know how long Damian Lillard is going to be out. Like, that Asar Thompson situation, he was out from March 2024 and he missed the beginning part of this season. We don't know how long he's going to be out. So it begs the question, like, what is really next for the Milwaukee Bucks if they can't get through this first round? Because I just, it's going to be hard to rely on rookies and a lot of aging veterans on this team. Torian Prince, Brooke Lopez, like, these guys aren't built to go, you know, 12 rounds in a playoff series right now on the heels of Giannis having to put everybody on his back.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to be addressing that, I'm sure, over the next coming weeks as we're closing out the regular season and everything else. But yeah, that's something that bears watching, that bears monitoring. When we come back, though, LeBron has decided to give a big time interview. We're going to tell you about that on the other side. Welcome back to The Good Word, here with Dan Titus. Dan, LeBron James decided to sit down with Pat McAfee of ESPN for a no-holds-barred interview, so to speak. He addressed a bunch of things. I think one of the things that Pat McAfee asked him about was his relationship or lack thereof with Michael Jordan. And he said, me and Mike don't really have, you know, a close relationship. He anticipates probably having a closer relationship with Jordan when he retires and when he takes off the 23 and, you know, when the conversation ends about, quote unquote, who's the greatest. Did that hit you a certain way? Because I have a couple of thoughts that I'm still sort of ruminating in my head right now, but I'm very curious how that hits you.
I mean, McAfee asked the question, right? Part of me is feeling like he just always chasing the validation and the support of who I would call Black Jesus in the basketball world. But it seemed a little bit thirsty to me. I don't think he needed to say it. However, I acknowledge the fact that, yeah, most NBA players will probably have a better relationship after they're retired and have a chance to kind of reflect on things. In terms of Michael Jordan, like, while he was playing, he never said he was the greatest player ever. He never fought that conversation. He was always saying, like, yo, people that came before me were great. We can have the conversation at a later date. I wish LeBron kind of looked at it that way. And I don't know. I think it's cool that he at least wants the admiration of Jordan and he wants to have a relationship with him. Like, obviously, those are the two greatest basketball players, in my opinion, ever. So any kind of aftermath that can come of that, you know, maybe we can have them do a like a J.J. Redick type podcast one time to hear both the intricate minds of these basketball players.
I can tell you, baby, one thing that ain't going to happen. You could get Nike to sponsor. You could get Gatorade to sponsor. You could put all the money up in the
world.
They
got all the same sponsors, so it would work.
No can do. Not happening. Right?
I'm going to say, the one thing, if he really wants to have a relationship with Mike, he better get on the golf course, because that's really all Mike be doing, right? Like
golf course in the sticks.
Yeah.
Just smoking a nice cigar. LeBron's a wine guy. Mike is a cigar guy. You know, that's where you do it. I think you said it. It's about, part of it is chasing the validation, LeBron going out of his way and on one of those, you know, ESPN partnerships things that he did a few years ago and said, you know, in 2016, winning the NBA championship, you know, coming back from 3-1, you know, that's the thing I felt like made me the greatest of all time. That probably just doesn't annoy Michael Jordan. That probably annoyed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It probably annoyed Magic Johnson. It would have annoyed Wilt Chamberlain rolling over in his grave. All right? William Felton Russell rolling over in his grave, you know, hearing that. He was still alive when LeBron said that. So I think, I wonder if there is, I want, and this is just projection on my part. So I'm not saying this is LeBron saying this. I'm curious about this. If LeBron is saying, yeah, I want a relationship with Michael, you know, I hope to have one with the acknowledgement that I'm greater than him. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like the caveat that's there. You know what I mean? Like,
said and done. Let's look at my resume. Let's look at yours. Come on, man.
Yeah. You know what the funny thing is, y'all? There's a Hall of Famer between Michael Jordan and LeBron James. Like, if I told you a guy won two championships, he won an MVP, he won a Defensive Player of the Year, he won the scoring title like 7 or 8 times, that dude's a Hall of Famer. That's the difference between Michael Jordan and LeBron James.
Yeah.
Sorry. Like, I don't think it is particularly close, right? Everybody has their opinion. Everybody's going to plant their flag on whatever corner. You ain't changing my mind. My criteria, just in general, before we go any further, is just this. How great were you when you were at your best? Mm-hmm. That's period, point blank. Everything after that is prologue. I don't care. Like, you can play until you're 30. You can play until you're 30 years in the league and play at this level. It's not going to change my mind. It's how great were you when you were at your absolute peak? And my argument always is this, Dan. I can't believe I'm going here. You dragged me into this. All right? You dragged me into this.
We got to blame LeBron, man. He's the one that's talking to McAfee for 75 minutes right now. Like, of course he's
got
to bring up.
Hey, I got all types of other thoughts on that one. But, baby, I'm going to wait till we are all the way off wax, okay? I'm going to wait till Dakota stops recording so nobody can hear it. Now, my general thing about that is this. There is the league, and then there is the game. The game is like the rules. You know what I'm saying? Like, one is the rules, and one is like your competition. The game that Michael played was a game for a bigger basketball player. When you have the illegal defense rules, when you had the way that players in general were bigger. This was not a smaller man's game. As far as when you go into the basket, you're actually seeing fours and fives and threes who are bigger than you. And Michael Jordan at 6'6 and 215 pounds dominated a game that was built for the Patrick Ewings, the David Robinsons, the Shaquille O'Neals, with the way the illegal defense was and everything else. Where Michael had an advantage, so to speak, was that expansion had occurred 4 or 5 years into his career, where you go from 23 teams to basically 30. When you add Miami, Orlando, Minnesota, and then you add Toronto, Vancouver, like, that's a lot of franchises that winds up diluting talent, where, you know, stars have to be dispersed, talent has to be dispersed, competition has to be dispersed in such a way that is advantageous for you, even if you have a player like Scottie Pippen on your team, right? Scottie Pippen ain't nobody else's number two, but Michael Jordan's number two. He would not survive in any other NBA except playing with Black Jesus himself. All right? Let's be clear on that. LeBron's advantage is where the league grew underneath his feet, where it became a three-point shooting league, right? And then later in his career, Dan, he became a better three-point shooter. But he also played in a league where, man, free agency, and I can go and pick my teammates at every single stop. I can drain the Miami Heat of all their resources and then go to Cleveland and demand that I drain them of all of their resources and then go to LA and do the same thing from Kevin Love to Kyrie Irving to Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Anthony Davis. Like, those are the ways that he bent the game to his will, right?
He's Jay-Z. Like, he never had his own flow. He's able to transcend time, learn along the way, and continue to be great. Like, he just has that ability. I don't consider Jay-Z the best rapper. I don't think you probably do either. So
it's funny. It's about somebody said, like, the comparison between Jay-Z and Biggie, which I guess if you're like two of the five.
Biggie's career was long enough. I love Biggie. Life After Death's one of my favorite albums ever. I think it could be the greatest rap album ever, but he just didn't have the longevity. That's like comparing him to like T-Mac and that 5-year run that he had.
Yeah, it's tough. Like like someone said, Biggie says the best stuff, but Jay-Z said it the best. You know what I mean? Like it's all subjective. It's completely all subjective. And that's where it takes me to this part of the conversation that really annoys the hell out of me. If you think the LeBron Mike conversation annoys the hell out of me, wait till you hear this one, honey. LeBron made a statement about Giannis, and he said, can you picture Giannis in the 70s? He would score 200 points on them. We act as if evolution is like linear, and we act as if, quote unquote, the skill set makes everything better. We never take into account of, man, what if those old guys had load management? What if those old guys had the benefit of watching today's players and then adding on to it? What if those old guys had the benefit of sleeping in real beds or not traveling on chartered flights or buses and slept in 5-star hotels and didn't play back-to-back nights every night of the week type of thing, and they could stretch out the regular season? Like, we never give those guys the benefit of all of the advantages that today's players have. In addition to the evolution, like, could Giannis exist if Dr. J wasn't the creative force that he was? If Connie Hawkins wasn't the creative force, they just go look him up. You know, David, I know I'm Thompson, speaking above everybody's head because people don't believe basketball existed until 2003. But there's ways that life has happened before you that has helped you develop your own game. And just because you are doing it different doesn't mean that you are somehow better or greater. What are we doing here?
Yeah, I just think that was LeBron's way of saying that Giannis could have played and dominated in any era.
Yes, fine. Absolutely. Because I love Giannis. He dominated in any era.
And if you look at the players that were most prominent in the 70s was like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I think he would have been a tough matchup for Giannis. He wouldn't have been getting 30, 10, and 5 against Kareem in his hay. But then you got like Bob Lanier, Wes Unseld, who was like 6'9". Elvin Hayes.
Wes Unseld's a tough dude. Hey, you ask tough. People.
He'll beat you up. Yeah.
Ask people about Wes Unseld. One of them dudes. So, here's the thing. You know, the problem we got, and I didn't mean to cut you off, so keep that thought there. Put a pin in that. The one thing that I wish we could do was just be able to respect when people say you had to be there. Because that's the first thing we will do is invalidate somebody saying you had to be there. Man, you can't explain them numbers, blah, blah, blah. Nah, sometimes you just got to be there. Sometimes everything ain't on the basketball reference page. Sometimes everything can't be put into offensive, defensive ratings and PER and all these other fancy metrics that we've created in the time since. Sometimes you just had to be there. And Wes Unseld is a, you had to be there, dude, because that dude won Rookie of the Year and MVP in the same year. That's tough.
Yeah, that is tough. And like I didn't watch a lot of Wes Unseld, unfortunately, in my day.
Right.
Like, I know
the
who
film
he was.
Wasn't accessible. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it does speak to, like, because I think the, so I'm trying to figure out, like, what era would it give Giannis the most trouble? And I feel like he would have had the most trouble in the 90s, because that was, like, to me, the best era of bigs consistently throughout the league, that you didn't know between the physicality and the way that the game was being refereed, like, they were actually calling travels. Like, Giannis's footwork, as much as it's improved over the course of time, like, he'd still be traveling and walking a little bit, taking five steps to the lane. So I think either way, Giannis is an all-time great player. He would have gotten his no matter what the era is. I just think that for LeBron to go straight to the 70s is kind of disrespectful, because it's like, yo, bro, like, Giannis would be good anywhere. That doesn't mean you have to diminish. Like, you're acting like the 70s were plumbers and things. Like, 250 points a game. Like, come on, man, stop it. Whereas I think you need to just kind of acknowledge, like, that era existed and it was great, and that was what Giannis evolved into. Like, we wouldn't have Giannis if it wasn't for those guys that came before.
I think, and to make another music analogy, I think, like, I was flying back from Miami, so my Spotify was on, like, shuffle or whatever, like, playing a song and something else comes on. And something came on from Aretha Franklin. Like, I'm an old school head, but something came on from Aretha.
Aretha?
Listen, I'm a child of Motown, right? So anything that can, like, can pop up or whatever, right? I've never heard a better voice in my life. Maybe you can say Whitney Houston in her prime. But if the theory of evolution holds up, I'm talking about a woman whose prime was maybe in the 60s, maybe in the 70s. And we have not produced a better singer with everything that we know today. We ain't produced nothing better, right? You can say Whitney Houston maybe is a little bit cleaner. You build Whitney in a lab. You can't build Aretha Franklin in a lab, right? And I know I'm crossing art. But the theory of evolution doesn't always mean because something is newer, it is better.
It
doesn't always work like that. And I wish people would sort of give a little more respect to people who didn't have all the advantages that we have. And I say we, as in me, too. You know what I mean? Like, we benefit from a lot of these things. And you talk about Giannis, and that's another point, you know, for the 90s. When you don't have the floor spread, when you don't have to guard shooters from 35 feet, because even if the guys could shoot from deep, they were not going to be encouraged to shoot from there. They was going to have their asses pulled out, right? So getting to the lane, getting down the lane, you had to be quicker because the lanes closed quicker because guys had fewer space to actually go and close. You know what I mean? Like, if you are at the free throw line extended, all you got to do is take two steps and you're in help, as opposed to taking four or five steps and now you're in help. That would have probably been a little bit tougher for Giannis, and maybe Giannis would have had to depend on more traditional point guard play. He'd have been more of a finisher as opposed to more of an initiator. The game, like you said, to your point, just would have looked different. Now we got to get to the main event, Dan. You ready for the main event of this? This is the main event, y'all. Now, everybody knows about the LeBron, Stephen A. Smith confrontation that happened a few weeks back. I think it was during the Knicks game at Staples Center, Crypto.com Arena, on a TNT game. Some cameras caught it. Stephen A. went on TV and talked about it the next day. LeBron basically walked up to Steve during a timeout and basically cussed him out for a quick second about, talking about Bronny. And on Pat McAfee's show, here's what he said, quote unquote. He's on a Taylor Swift tour run right now. It started with, I don't want to address this. MF, are you kidding me? You couldn't wait to address it. He missed the whole point. Never would I ever not allow people to criticize the sport. But when you get personal with it, it's my job to protect my damn household and to protect the players. And he also said he's going to be smiling ear to ear when he hears me talking about him again, sitting in a chair with his ice cream and tidy whities, listening to me talk about him. Stephen A. Smith has been talking a lot about the LeBron confrontation, to a large degree because the attention economy demands it, right? This is just where we are. You're going to beat a topic into the ground. Stephen A. Smith is someone that I am professionally close with. That is someone that I've considered, you know, someone whose ear I've bent over a number of issues throughout the course of my career. I'm not going to not talk about this and say that me and Steve ain't cool, because we've been cool for a number of years in this. I think to some degree, both sides, Dan, have their case. When Steve went on TV and said, as a father, after Bronny got tore up by Tyrese Maxey on national TV, where he just looked overmatched, and Stephen A. said, as a father, I'm pleading with you, or whatever it is, please stop this. I'm sure that's the thing that tipped LeBron off, that upset him that much. I'm not a father. I can't speak to those fatherly instincts. I'm an older brother. I can tell you, if somebody talked about my older brother, my younger brother like that, we could be doing just talking. We gonna be fighting, dog. It's not that's not happening, right? So I, on some level of protection, you know what I mean? But I wonder, where does the line stop from, is Bronny just your son, or is Bronny a professional basketball player who can get criticized? Like, I'm trying to figure out where that line is, and I don't know where the line is because we have not established where the line is. But then, you're a parent. I'm not. You tell me how all of that sat with you.
Yeah. So I feel like him coming up to Stephen A. in the public setting, obviously he was sitting front row, so everybody in the arena was going to see that that interaction and as it happened. If I'm Bron, yeah. Did you need to address it? Sure. Could it have been done in the tunnel? Probably. And I don't know. You know, obviously there's some conversation about, yo, Stephen A. was saying something like, you and Rich Paul had my line. You could have called me. We could have talked about it, whatever. I don't know if that happened or if it didn't. If LeBron was compelled to address it right then and there, respect to him for doing that. My issue with it was, as much as it's LeBron defending his family and protecting his family, and Stephen A. was out of pocket for challenging his parental decisions, don't come at him as a father. However, let your son fight your battles. Bronny is a man. He's sitting in the league right now. He could go up to Stephen A. and challenge it. Because a lot of this also is like, Bron was offended that he was coming at him, talking about him being a father. But at the same time, Stephen A. has also been very vocal about Bronny's play and him not feeling like he belonged. And now you see Stephen A. flipping his script as usual, talking out both sides of his mouth, saying like, oh, well, I just knew with time he would be a basketball player. Like, no, you wasn't saying that 3 months ago. You were always talking about nepotism, how he wasn't ready there, how the second 55th player in the draft shouldn't be covered the way that he is. You're setting him up for failure. So I think, to your point, I think it's like kind of both sides are at fault here. Like, I think LeBron, as a parent, I think he had a right to speak his mind and handle it and address it the way that he did. But I didn't think he could have done it in a less public setting, and it wouldn't have had the virality that it had. At the same time, I think you also need to just let Bronny be Bronny, handle your business, because you can't constantly come to the defense of your kid all throughout his life, or else he's not going to be able to do anything himself. Give him a voice. We want to hear from Bronny, not that Stan account that keeps on retweeting everything that comes out about Bronny. Like, we need to hear from Bronny about how he's doing. And I think, you know, as we've seen Bronny kind of mature throughout this season, he's having success in the G League. He had a coming out party just a week ago. I've always thought that Bronny, I didn't know that I necessarily thought that he would be a pro ready player now, but I was of the opinion of, give this kid a chance. Like, he's super young. He's still coming back off of a heart condition. He didn't get a full year at USC. So I think that there was time to see that. And like, he's LeBron James's kid. Not all father-son duos work out, but I'm pretty sure this kid's going to be all right eventually. I still have questions about where he's going to fit in terms of his size. He's 6'2". Is he going to be a combo guard? Is he going to be a point guard? So I think you got to give it time. But at the same breath of it, I think Stephen A. needs to probably chill out with it now. I know he's enjoying all the engagement farming he's been getting from this. And LeBron addressed it again. So he's going to probably get on his show and talk about it again tomorrow on First Take and probably on his podcast. But that's the world we live in, right? Like, everything's about addressing this engagement farming agenda. And Stephen A. is the best at it, man. And I think I enjoy the entertainment factor of it, but I'm also tired of hearing about it because, honestly, like, what are we talking about? There's a lot better basketball that we could be discussing, not Bronny, LeBron, and Stephen A. and their drama.
Yeah, it's a lot of different things. Like, the important thing as far as just the Bronny situation, because I was somebody that said, this doesn't make me feel good. In the very beginning, I was not one of those. I think it was Jay Williams and all those other people saying, you know, it's about time for us to have black nepotism. And I'm like, no. So this is the thing? This is the thing that we're going to have black, like nothing of real substance. We're going to have black nepotism here. And then you know what's going to happen? The world is going to keep moving and it's going to be all these instances of nepotism that don't benefit nobody else. Like, right. How about we have a level playing field, ideally everywhere? And I would not advocate for nepotism. It's a weird space to sit in with LeBron and Bronny because, like you said, when you were talking, Dan, that kid almost died. And that's the part to me that because we didn't see it on television, like Damar Hamlin, it doesn't register with us. We saw it, we heard about it in a tweet and an update and everything else. And there's only so much that we knew about Bronny at the time anyway. So there was only so much of a connection that we could project onto him. Other than, man, that's LeBron's son. LeBron's son almost died and everything else. I wanted the kid to enjoy college. Yeah. Like, college seems like a lot of fun. you know what I mean?
Imagine how much money he would have been making in NIL. Like, whew.
That's what I'm saying. So it's a tough thing to balance. But like you said there, that didn't feel right. Like, I don't feel like necessarily LeBron handled the presentation of how Bronny was going to be introduced and presented as an NBA player the right way. It was going to make people feel a certain way. Not everybody was going to look at this and say, oh, this is some heartwarming father-son moment. This wasn't Ken Griffey Sr. and Jr. hitting home runs back-to-back because you know that Jr. was that dude.
Yeah, right.
Like there was no doubt that Jr. was coming. Yeah. Like, yeah. Sports is about merit. It's about competition. It's about proving it on the field of play. And we hadn't seen Bronny do it. And that did look a little uncomfortable when Tyrese Maxey was playing against Bronny. And it's a 5-on-5 game. And the game looked too fast for Bronny. And it didn't look like that he was connecting with what it took to be a pro in the NBA. It didn't look like he was a pro. It looked like during the lockout, not lockout year, it looked like during the COVID year where everybody was just out with COVID and then you had to call players up from the G League and you knew these dudes wasn't pros. Like, somebody scored 20, you like, who is this dude?
Right.
But look who he's playing against. You know what I mean? Like, it looked like, it's like you know it when you see it type of thing. Like, I don't have to look at a high school kid and know his projection to be like, hey man, I think that kid's a pro. Like, I don't have to see the stars by your name. I could just look at a college guy and say, man, that dude's a pro. You didn't have that feeling with Bronny. And I think that's what brought the ire from Steve is that it felt like the kid was being embarrassed. Or if at worst, it felt like the kid was being used as a prop in LeBron's story. And that doesn't serve him. It felt like it was serving LeBron. And that's something that all of us should feel some level of discomfort with, especially for the people advocating for nepotism. You were trying to use this flesh and blood human being, 19-year-old, to advance LeBron James's story. And that should make you feel like shit.
It's definitely another chapter in his legacy, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you called Ken Griffey to do the whole photo op and all that. Like, this is all, it's all just being scripted to the LeBron legacy, right? So to me, like, that part of it, I don't like, but that's LeBron.
Yeah.
As we were talking about the top of it, why are you talking to Pat McAfee for 75 minutes when you should be at shoot around? I mean, I'm saying where you should be at shoot around, but like, you're in Indianapolis, like, you guys are going, you're struggling a little bit. You lost 7 of your last 10 games. Why are you going to the Disney Network right now to talk shop? Like, it, I don't know. That's just LeBron moves to the beat of his own drum.
He's content, baby. He just gave us a good 25 minutes of us talking about this. Don't ask why. Ask why not more. When we come back, more content for you, because I was in Miami watching Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat reunite one more time. Welcome back to The Good Word. It is time for the last word with Dan Titus. Dan, I was in Miami last night. The Jimmy Butler returned to Miami game against the Heat. people were expecting, they were expecting the fireworks. They might have been expecting fisticuffs. They might have been expecting Jimmy to go walk up to Pat Riley and deliver the rock bottom and then the Stone Cold Stunner to Alonzo Mourning. Like, none of that was going to happen. And what wound up happening, Dan, was I looked at the calendar and I was like, wait, the Golden State Warriors have been in Miami since when? After coming from Atlanta? If there's two places that you don't want to be, y'all, on the NBA circuit, when you got games that you have to win, you don't want to be in Atlanta and then going to Miami, because, baby, that wasn't the Heat that beat Golden State last night. That was the South Beach / Magic City flu. That's what that was. But we were expecting, Dan, we were expecting, like, fireworks and everything else. Jimmy got his like returned video, like tribute video, very short video, mind you. It wasn't that long. So, and there was no daps, no hugs. The only person he talked to was Kevin Love. He dapped up Alec Burks, but there wasn't a lot of love lost. And I just think both sides were so exhausted of each other because of everything that has happened, basically since the end of last season when Pat Riley told Jimmy Butler to shut up if you're not playing, which started this downward spiral of everything that has led here. Eventually, I think the sides are hopefully going to reconcile. Like, years down the line, Jimmy Butler's going to have to get his jersey retired. He's going to go into the Hall of Fame, everything else. But right now, it just looked like both sides were understandably fatigued from each other from the past 6 or 7 months.
Yeah, I think that was the theme of yesterday was fatigue because, yeah, as you said, going from Atlanta to Miami, the Warriors didn't even show up. Like, they put on their second worst performance in the first half of the season. Can we just do away with these tribute videos? Like, unless it's, like, actually warranted. Like, it just seemed like weird energy for how much Jimmy coming up to the game was saying, like, I don't want to speak to them. I hope Pat don't speak to me.
He said, He said, he told Taylor Brooks of TNT, he said, I don't have anything to say to him, and he better not have anything to say to me.
Right.
That sounds like WWE. That sounds like you got the championship belt behind you. That sounds like he walking in with the title belt saying, take it off my cold, dead fingers.
And then he was also saying, like, oh, I'm always painted as the bad guy. They just who was that? Who was that wrestling term? The bad guy. Was that Razor Ramon?
Razor Ramon.
Yeah, Razor Ramon.
The late Scott Hall.
Great wrestler. Toothpick. I love that dude. Yes, sir. You're right. But to that, it was like the energy was all off. So why are y'all going to, like, devote this video tribute where, like, there were some cheers, there were some boos, you were in the crowd. So, like, I know you probably heard the mixed bag of it. It just didn't seem necessary. Like, you could do that, as you said, reconcile the relationship, wait till he's, like, on his, like, farewell tour. And then it's like, all right, let's pay homage to the time that you had in Heat. You've been dissing Heat culture kind of over the last, you know, year and some change. So, like, at this point, it just wasn't a good idea. But I digress.
Can we do away with Heat culture?
I'm okay with it. Because at this point, I think they tried to rally that around, oh, it's just this tenacity and this grit. That's Heat culture. It's like, no, Jimmy Butler style of play transitioned this into a team that just happened to be very gritty and, you know, honestly, just very tough nailed. But, like, a lot of those players now are gone. Like, you got Tyler Hero as your main star with Bam Adebayo. Like, that's not, there's no Heat culture there. Like, Jimmy Butler created that. And so, like, to talk about that as, like, this aura around the Miami Heat organization, like, I think it's a detriment to the players that actually created that culture.
Look, for one, when you'd force Dwayne Wade to leave out, you know, in 2016 and go to Miami to get his money. Go to Chicago to get his money. When you don't pay him after years of him never being the top paid player on your team, he's never the highest paid player on the team.
Playing through a lot of injuries.
That's when Heat culture dies. You know what Heat culture is? You know what, LeBron? Come to South Beach and come join with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. That's Heat culture. And then, like, it's never about the players. It's supposed to be about the players, in my opinion. This is a players' league. And when anytime whether it's the Patriot way or Heat culture or whatever it is. How that Patriot way looking? Not if you ain't got Tom Brady there. Not if you ain't got all those dudes there. It's the pencil pushers. It's the coaches, general managers thinking that it's about them. Thinking it's about them that sets the standard. Yeah, you can set the standard, but the standard has to be carried out by players who are legit championship players. And Jimmy Butler, when it's all said and done, or at least to this point, unless they, you know, go acquire someone better, only Dwayne Wade and LeBron James are better Miami Heat players than Jimmy Butler. Like, legit. And
I would throw a dark horse in there, and Udonis Haslam, just because, like, leadership matters. He helped, you know what I'm saying? Like, he was the vet. Nobody was messing with, like, they always gotta
more,
have the goon.
He's more beloved.
Sure. All right.
He was more beloved. He took a lot of sacrifices at certain points of his career so that the big three could get together. And in the last couple of years, he was.
I think he helped with the cohesion and the connectivity, the chemistry.
Yeah,
and all
he
that.
Threatened like, people. Remember, he told Jimmy, "I'll goon you up during the game."
Hey, you need that though. That's critical.
but I'm not saying he's better. Like, come on,
no, he's not better.
You ain't putting the game in Udonis Haslam hands and saying, "Hey, dog, go carry us to the finals." That's what I'm talking about. So I think for Jimmy Butler, he's been to Chicago, Minnesota, Philadelphia, Miami, and now Golden State. Somehow, he's found a way to embody all of the stops that he'd been in. You felt like he was gritty, like the Philadelphia team that he was on. You felt like he fit Chicago with how he came up in that Derrick Rose era, you know, coming up under Tibbs and playing all those minutes and everything else. And then you felt like, man, he really fits Miami. And now that he's in Golden State, it feels like, man, he really fits what they do too. The only place that he really didn't seem like he fit was Minnesota. But out of four of those five stops, you know, you brought up the interesting point about Jimmy and Jimmy saying he's the bad guy. One, Jimmy likes playing into being the bad guy, right? He does not mind being the bad guy. The problem with that is, to some degree, Jimmy wants to be able at some point, I would hope Jimmy would be able to tell his story about why these things have happened in all these different places. And I don't think Jimmy's always wrong. I don't think he's always right, but I don't think he's always wrong in these spots. And it's a saying, I forgot who said it, and maybe I just came up with it myself. I honestly can't remember, but everybody wants to be misunderstood until they want someone to understand. And at some point, you're going to want someone to understand what makes you tick, why you do the things that you do. And hopefully there's the vulnerability and there's the openness for Jimmy to be able to say, okay, this thing makes sense. Like, I was there in Chicago. I know why that relationship went sour. You know what I mean? Like, I can understand why the Minnesota relationship went sour. Philadelphia picked Tobias Harris over him. That really wasn't the Jimmy Butler problem.
Yeah.
And then Miami decided that they weren't going to pay him entering into his 36 and 37, you know, year old seasons. Some of this stuff seems logical. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is more emotional or prideful.
Yeah. I mean, with the Warriors situation, like, I think I've been paying attention to a lot of what he's been saying since he's been a member of the Warriors, and he's just hyping up Steph Curry. He's the best player. We got to protect him. I'm going to do everything that I can do. If I need to be aggressive here, I'm going to be a passive here and playmaker here. Like, and that's the thing. When Jimmy's happy, like, he's a good teammate to have. It's just a matter of, like, when you're getting to the point of, it's like the breaking point. Like, how many more, if he has a paycheck coming up, or you said something to him to make him feel some type of way, then he'll plan his exit, and that's when he starts doing the antics and being very vocal about his intentions and what he wants. I guess to his detriment, there's not many more years left to do that. Like, I think this might be the final stop for him. And that's okay, because I think when this is all said and done, Jimmy Butler impacted winning in every place that he went. And that's all that really matters in the end of this. Like,
Not only did he impact winning, these other places have not won since he left. Philadelphia has not come close. Like, the closest Philadelphia has come to winning has been when Kawhi Leonard, bounce, 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 bounce.
Yeah, it was.
You know, like, that was, and who tied the game right before that? Jimmy Butler on the end-to-end layup, which would have sent the game into overtime. Maybe they don't win that series anyway because it would have been a game seven in overtime in Toronto with Kawhi Leonard still being Kawhi Leonard. Who knows? Still reeling from that, from the Jimmy Butler defection or when they traded Jimmy Butler because they did not want to supermax him out. That decision didn't seem smart then. I was there, and it still looks dumb as hell right now, right? Minnesota, yeah, they rebounded to some degree, but Minnesota's in the play-in. They got
Anthony Edwards to do that.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
If you're looking right after he left Minnesota, they were regular.
Right. And now you got Miami, who's like 6-15 or 6-17 since they've traded them. The one thing I will say, you brought up the Steph Curry point. I was in Chicago with Jimmy the year that Dwayne Wade was there. And Jimmy treated Dwayne with so much reverence, even though Dwayne Wade was clearly on the back end of his career. And there was a respect that he had for him because here's a guy who's done it. He's better than me. He's historically more accomplished than me. That's how I believe Jimmy looks at Steph Curry to some degree. On a different level because Jimmy's more accomplished and Steph is more of a made man and everything else. And Steph is better at this point than Dwayne was at that point.
Sure.
But the respect level that he has for not just Steph, but also Steve Kerr as a coach, and Draymond Green as another hard ass on that team. Like, he's not trying to battle with Stephen Curry or Draymond Green. He's trying to get to where they are. Like, he was trying to get to where Dwayne Wade was in terms of stature across the league. That's why I think whatever could happen as far as the best of whatever could happen, it doesn't mean they're going to get to the finals, Dan. I just feel like you're going to get the best out of what he has left at this stage of his career and where his body can give you.
Yeah, no, that's where I'm at with it. And it's kind of interesting, though, because, like, without Steph, it looks like Steph's going to be back on Friday.
He'll be back Friday.
The Warriors just did not look good, so they need Steph back. It's funny, yes, the way that the Western Conference is working out right now, where only 2.5 games separates the 2 seed from the 5 seed, and then the Warriors are right behind them with 3 games. So each of these teams are going to have to go on their respective runs here, and I think, you know, we'll see what happens with Denver because Jokic just continues to miss games as he's going to probably get ready and get healthy for the postseason. But, yeah, this is going to be one of the more fun playoff battles or final stretches that we've seen in a long time.
Dan, look, there was a period where it felt like the Warriors were winning 7 straight, the Lakers were winning 7 straight, the Clippers had won 5 straight, Minnesota had won 4 or 5 straight, and nothing changed in the standings.
Nothing.
Now it's like, wait, Sacramento's lost 4 in a row. The Lakers have lost 3 in a row. Golden State's lost 2 in a row. Like, everybody's losing and nobody's changing anything because this is how the Wild Wild West works. Man, Dan, this has been a full-plated episode here of The Good Word, man. Really appreciate you, my man.
No doubt.
Thanks to producer Dakota and the entire team that works so hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back next week with another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.